Welcome. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Last week, President Obama came out in support of reclassifying internet service as a utility, a move that would allow the FCC to enforce more robust regulations and protect net neutrality. Just hours after the president made the announcement, FCC Chairman Tom Wheeler told officials from companies including Google and Yahoo that he preferred a more, quote, nuanced solution. That approach would deliver some of what the president wants, but would also address the concerns of companies like Comcast, AT&T, and Time Warner. According to a Washington Post report, Chairman Wheeler said, quote, "What you want is what everyone wants, an open internet that doesn't affect your business. What I've got to figure out is how to split the baby," end quote. So what does this mean exactly? What does it mean when President Obama came out supporting internet neutrality, and then we hear this from FCC Chair Tom Wheeler? What will the FCC do next, and what are the politics surrounding the FCC? Joining us today is Michael Copps, former commissioner for the FCC. He served from 2001 to 2011. He's also special advisor to the Media and Democracy Reform Initiative for Common Cause, a nonpartisan watchdog fighting for an honest and accountable government. And former Commissioner Copps joins me in studio. Hi, thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having me. I'm thrilled to be here.
Great to have you. And Craig Aaron is president and CEO of Free Press, an organization that works to protect the free and open internet, ensure press freedoms, and encourage diverse voices in the media. Hi, Craig. Welcome back to the show.
Hi, good morning, and thanks for having me back.
It's great to have you back. I should say Michael Copps is on the board of Free Press, and Michael Copps is speaking tonight at a rally outside of San Francisco City Hall. The event is Bay Area Speaks, a people's hearing on the future of the internet. The rally begins outside City Hall at 5:30, and the hearing starts at 7 o'clock. And you can find more information at yourcallradio.org. So, Mike, I can call you Mike.
That's great.
Okay.
That's my name.
All right. So you were really surprised by President Obama's announcement last week.
Well, I was pleasantly surprised. President Obama has always said he was for network neutrality, would take a backseat to nobody on it, but had never waded into the specific commitment for the real kind of net neutrality that we're trying to get right now. And what that meant to me when he made the specific statement was that this really shows the American people that this rises to a national issue. This is an important issue, and I think when the president speaks about something, it shows that he's talking about something that he thinks is important to the national economy, important to the future of innovation and technology, and important especially to the future of our small-d democracy.
Because a lot of organizations like Common Cause and so many others that have been really pushing for net neutrality for years, we're very happy about this announcement.
We are happy about the announcement, absolutely. And we are hoping that our friends at the Federal Communications Commission are listening. But as you pointed out, the chairman still seems to be toying with some kind of split-the-baby decision, as you call it, or a hybrid decision that just is not going to get the job done. This is our opportunity right now. This is an inflection point for the FCC. If they make the wrong decision on the FCC, I think we'll be years, if ever, being able to recover from it.
If
it's
ever.
That important.
Wow. And again, Tom Wheeler was in a meeting with companies including Google, Yahoo, and Etsy. And the Washington Post spoke with four people who attended the meeting, and that split the baby comment came directly from Tom Wheeler, according to these
right.
four people. Craig Aaron, what was your reaction when you heard President Obama's announcement last week?
Well, like Commissioner Copps, I was surprised and very pleasantly so. I think this was a very strong and clear statement. This wasn't the kind of statement that you have to try to read between the lines, and I think he really means this, and everyone should act accordingly. They laid out very clearly the policy they think the FCC should pursue. It is a public interest policy. It is grounded in the law. It is the kind of policy that would very clearly protect internet users and stand up in court, and that's what we've all been asking for. And I think that, you know, despite the Washington Post report, I think that is a message that's being heard at the Federal Communications Commission. There were a couple other reports that came out with people going on the record saying they're not sure that's what Tom Wheeler meant. I mean, we may need to remind him that the lesson of that Bible story about splitting the baby is you can't split the baby. That's the point of the story. And you really can't. You have to have one internet. You can't cut it in half. You can't do another half measure that's not going to survive. You need to do clear rules, strong rules under what's called Title II of the Communications Act. I don't know if that's exactly what the FCC will do or if they are there yet, but I'll guarantee you this, the president's statement completely upended this debate, completely changed the momentum in the debate, and I think took off the table any number of really terrible proposals that the FCC was considering. So I think the momentum is squarely behind real net neutrality, and I'm increasingly hopeful that we're going to see that kind of real net neutrality proposal come out of the FCC in the months ahead.
And Craig, why now? Why do you think the president was so direct and vocal about net neutrality?
I think there are probably two reasons. The first is that the FCC was sending a lot of signals saying, we want to move forward with this so-called hybrid proposal, sort of half-internet proposal. And they were sending a lot of signals that they wanted to do that and do it quickly. So if the FCC, if the White House was going to weigh in, this was the time they had to do it. I also think, finally, with the FCC about to act, this was an issue that finally rose to the upper levels of the White House, and they were given a choice between some policies, maybe even all the way to the president's desk, between confusing, convoluted policies that, you know, barely anybody at the FCC could explain, between doing nothing and between doing the right thing that we've been asking them to do and endorse this strong net neutrality. Fortunately, they chose that last path, and I think it is somewhat influenced by the election. You know, the Democratic Party did very poorly in the election, obviously lost control of the Senate. That was obviously maybe later than some of us would have liked, but quite a wake-up call to the White House. And I think they recognize that so many of their supporters, or people they wish were their supporters, really care about this issue. 4 million people commenting at the FCC, every major group, major progressive group that does online organizing, Daily Kos, Move On, Credo, all of these folks, the first thing they emailed about after the election, besides the results of that election, was net neutrality. And I think that was a message that finally broke through at the White House, and they rightfully recognized if they're going to do something, they might as well do something that's a really strong rules. If they're going to have to fight the new Republican Congress over this issue, they might as well be fighting for something that could actually work.
I think Craig is absolutely right that the president's statement puts strong wind at the back of those of us who are searching for real net neutrality. But let's not underestimate the steep climb that still remains to be done here. Unless public pressure continues, unless we really fight an all-out fight, this could easily go the wrong way. Tom Wheeler is not there yet. I hope he gets there. There's an old statement, you know, an adage, a man convinced against his will is a man of the same opinion still. And I hope that's not going to operate on him. But don't underestimate the power of the piles of money that Comcast and AT&T and Verizon have to throw into this, the legions of lobbyists, the armies of lawyers, and they're walking the halls of the FCC right now as you and I are talking across the table here from one another. So this is a battle that needs to be won, and it needs to be won now, and I'm disappointed now by, well, we have to take more time. It's going to take a few more months, because the more time you give these companies, the more consolidation they go through, the more time that they can hone the powers of gatekeeping that they're becoming so artistic at. So the time to put an end to this is in the next month. I had hoped they would do this in December. It's not going to happen right now, but I hope it doesn't go much beyond January, because time is not our friend here, I don't believe.
The people who deeply care about net neutrality are very passionate about this. Do you think the public at large really understands the importance of net neutrality?
It's amazing to me that 4 million people have contacted the FCC about something called net neutrality, which is a pretty anemic phrase, and gotten sufficiently down in the weeds to say most of them, we want Title II net neutrality. That's amazing to me. And this is not, as I go around the country, a red state, blue state issue. And there was a poll that came out of the University of Delaware, one of its centers, last week, that showed that 85% of Republican voters don't want a fast lane, slow lane internet. People understand that these companies are messing with their main tool of communication and interconnectedness and networking, and they don't want any part of that. And especially when you're talking about companies like Comcast and Time Warner that have a merger pending before the FCC, and everybody knows these are two of the poorest performing consumer companies in the United States of America. They're always at the bottom of the polls. So now we're talking the future of the internet, and if we want to follow the cable companies and cableize the internet, who better to do it than companies like Comcast and Time Warner Cable?
President Obama said, quote, "I am asking the FCC to answer the call of almost 4 million public comments and implement the strongest possible rules to protect net neutrality," end quote. He urged FCC Chair Tom Wheeler to reclassify ISPs like Comcast and Verizon under Title II of the Communications Act, giving the FCC more power over how these companies operate. Craig, why was it significant for the president to specifically talk about Title II? Can you explain what that means?
Sure. Title II, in many ways, are the magic words here, and that's how you can tell whether someone's talking about real net neutrality or some kind of imposter version. And basically, this all goes back to a series of decisions that were made at the FCC during the Bush administration. And we have to go back a little further to the passage of the 1996 Telecommunications Act, which is the last time the core communications laws of the country were updated. And basically, under that law, any kind of two-way communications, that's not broadcast, not traditional cable TV, but two-way communications like this phone conversation we're having right now, are treated as telecommunication services under the law, which is what Title II is. Title II is a part of the law that applies to telecommunication services. But during the Bush administration, they changed how broadband internet access was going to be treated under the law, and they decided that instead of it being a telecommunication service, they were going to classify it as an information service. And there's a long history here, a case that went all the way to the Supreme Court called Brand X, which essentially ruled that it's up to the FCC. What might not have been a good decision, and there were some pretty scathing dissents from Justice Scalia, among others, but basically they ruled it's up to the FCC to decide how to classify the internet. The problem is, in giving up its authority, in changing how the internet was treated under the law, the FCC ultimately lost the ability to actually protect internet users, actually stop blocking unreasonable discrimination, the creation of fast lanes, and they have lost a series of cases every time they've tried to make rules. The FCC, when Commissioner Copps was there, back in 2007, tried to sanction Comcast when it was caught blocking the internet, blocking lawful file sharing. Comcast sued the FCC, claiming there weren't clear rules and they lacked the authority. The FCC lost. Again, in 2010, they made net neutrality rules that, I don't think were perfect, but were certainly stronger than what the FCC had been proposing this time around. And again, they lost in court because the FCC didn't have the authority. And the court was very clear. They told the FCC, you cannot stop blocking unreasonable discrimination, all the things that we worry about, unless these services are called common carrier services. In other words, they're treated under the law as telecommunication services. You've decided they're not that, and you can't apply those kind of regulations. What we've been arguing ever since the previous court case is that is why the FCC needs to go back and fix this original problem, which is called reclassifying broadband under Title II, and that's where we are now. And just last week, the president squarely sided with the public interest community on this issue in making very clear that the only way to really guarantee protections and make sure the rules will stand up in court is to reclassify broadband under Title II.
Craig Aaron is president and CEO of Free Press, an organization that works to protect the free and open internet and encourage diverse voices in media. Michael Copps is former commissioner for the FCC. He served from 2001 to 2011. He's special advisor to the Media and Democracy Reform Initiative for Common Cause, a nonpartisan watchdog fighting for an honest and accountable government. Michael Copps is speaking tonight at a rally outside of San Francisco City Hall. The event is called Bay Area Speaks, a people hearing on the future of the internet. The rally starts at 5:30 and the hearing starts at 7 o'clock. You can find more information at yourcallradio.org. And if you'd like to join us today, what are your thoughts on the different comments we heard from President Obama about internet neutrality last week, and FCC Chair Tom Wheeler. If you have any questions about net neutrality, we'd love to hear from you. And then also, what about the FCC? How does it work? Do you have questions about how it works, the politics behind it? Michael Kopp served as commissioner for the FCC 2001 to 2011, so he's had to interact with some of the major players in Washington, like Comcast and Verizon. If you have any questions for him about the relationship between government officials and those corporations, and the lobbying that he says is being done as we're speaking, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. What do you think is the significance of President Obama's announcement? You can email, you can also leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org. Commissioner Kopp's former Commissioner Nicholas Johnson, who now teaches at the University of Iowa College of Law, said, quote, "There is no single independent regulatory commission that comes close to the impact of the FCC on every American's life. That's why Congress, in creating it, characterized its mission as serving the public interest, an expression used throughout the act."
That was true when Nick said it. I don't have the exact date there, but it is even truer with every passing day because the communications infrastructure is so central to the future of our country. And it was Nick Johnson, I think, who came up with this approach to detailing the importance of the communications infrastructure. He would go out and speak and ask audiences, what do you think is the most important issue facing the United States of America? And he would get lots of different answers in response. Well, I think it's the economy, it's jobs, it's the lack of equal opportunity, it's the destruction of our climate, it's health care, it's education, all these things. And Nick's response was, well, that's all well and good, and that's fine, but none of those issues are going to go anywhere. None of those issues are going to get resolved unless we have a media system in the United States that's teeing up those issues for the American people, digging for facts, telling the truth, and making them a central part of the civic dialogue. So he would say, you keep that number one issue of yours, that's just fine, but you take this media issue and the future of our communications infrastructure and put it up right next to it, because none of our problems are going to get solved unless we get our communications infrastructure right. And we've been through years and years of the destruction of investigative journalism, the destruction of diverse journalism and localism and all the rest, which has been was my passion at the FCC and continues to be right now. We have dumbed down our civic dialogue so much in the United States of America, and the only way we're going to get it back is to have a media that really is worthy of this country, and the only way we're going to be able to govern ourselves successfully is to have that kind of news and information that people really need to make intelligent decisions for the future of their country.
Right, because when the Telecom Act passed, we saw massive, massive media consolidation as a result of that.
We saw it as a result of that, and we saw. I think the FCC, though, took it far beyond anything that Congress intended at the time, and it was just to open the doors. I was there for almost 11 years, and you know, I thought I would be going into a job where I was working with all these edge-of-the-envelope issues and bringing the wonders of new technology to the people. I didn't realize I was going to be spending about half of my time just listening to one troop of CEOs after another come in telling me why their companies had to do this merger, this acquisition, how wonderful that was going to be for them, how wonderful it was going to be for the country. And the beat goes on. There was a front-page story in the New York Times just yesterday about this year is the largest year ever for mergers and acquisitions, like $1.5 trillion in the United States of America, and it singled out media as one of the three main areas where this is going on. That's why I was the only person at the FCC to actually vote against that Comcast-NBCU merger.
You also conducted town halls across the country. You went to about 85 to 90 towns, and I think that's why your name is fairly familiar to people who follow these issues. But I was just thinking, I don't think I can name one commissioner right now on the FCC. I just don't hear much about them in the media. So can you talk about the makeup of today's FCC?
Well, the FCC needs to get out of Washington, D.C. I don't think it has any business voting on something as important as the open Internet. unless those five commissioners go out and talk to the American people. And that's how the American people learn about the FCC and who's on the FCC and who Tom Wheeler and the other members are. And more importantly, that's how the FCC learns what's on people's minds and what do people who have to live with the consequences of their decisions, like the upcoming decision on the open Internet, how do they feel about it? It's all well and good to sit in Washington, D.C. and talk to the big business interests. And I have no problem with sitting down and talking, or I didn't when I was there, with Comcast or AT&T and Verizon. You should talk with them. They're experts in this. But you can't limit it to that. You've got to get the non-traditional stakeholders in. It's supposed to be a consumer protection agency. And who better to talk to than the American people? And they can't afford to come traipsing into Washington, D.C., and they certainly can't afford all these beautifully researched and wrapped petitions for rulemaking that big business comes in with. So, for heaven's sake, get out on the road. And I never went to one of those hearings anywhere in the United States of America, and Free Press and Common Cause and lots of other groups were behind those hearings, where I didn't learn something I didn't know before I got there.
Hmm. Craig, Free Press is a very active advocacy group. Talk a little bit about how you all interact with the FCC today versus maybe 10 years ago. Have things drastically changed?
I think things have changed, and I mean, Commissioner Copps and his colleague, Commissioner Adelstein, former FCC commissioner, deserve a lot of credit for helping open the doors at the FCC to actual public input. But I will say there has been a change since the commissioner was there, in that the current members of the commission are very reluctant to actually go out in public. You know, somehow they find a way every year to make it to the broadcasting trade show and the wireless phone trade show and the cable show and the consumer electronics show, and, you know, plenty of trips to Las Vegas in there, but actually going out and doing hearings, talking to real people, actually listening, which is the thing that Commissioner Copps always did, is he would actually sit there and listen for 4 or 5 hours sometimes before he even said a word. That's been not a priority for this FCC, and I think it's a real problem because they're getting out of touch with the American public at an agency where that is a genuine, genuine problem. It's a very captured agency. There is a revolving door that spins between industry and the regulators, and when you lose touch with the public, it's a problem. What we've tried to do at Free Press over the last decade is to open up that process a lot more, make sure more people can participate, amplify and channel the energy of millions and millions of people who care a lot about the Internet and that it functions, who care a lot about the media and what it's telling them about their communities, but can't actually spend time on, you know, because they have to go to work, actually dealing with the minutiae of FCC process and procedure and being able to look through the footnotes for where the problems might be. So that's what we try to do, is keep one foot on the inside, paying attention to those difficult decisions, being an early warning system, and another foot on the outside, actually organizing pressure. And make no mistake, the reason real net neutrality is in play at this point is because the public mobilized, because they spoke out, because 4 million people, which is far more people than have ever commented on anything at the Federal Communications Commission, made themselves heard. And don't think that, for example, the White House isn't polling on this issue. They poll on everything. They poll on the color of the president's tie. You know, they were doing research on whether this was a winning issue for them, and what they found is there were a lot of people that they would like to have on their side who care a lot about a free and open Internet. And that's why I'm somewhat confident, despite all the obstacles that Commissioner Copps rightfully brings up. And it really gets at the problem I think he's identifying, and that he escaped from when he was on the commission, is this understanding that if you actually go talk to people, you might learn what's important to them.
And Craig, hold that thought. We're going to take a quick break. Today we're talking about net neutrality and the politics of the FCC. We'll be back after this.
This is Your Call on KALW San Francisco, a program that relies on conversations with engaged listeners. We invite you to join today's conversation. 866-798-TALK is the number. It's a toll-free call, 866-798-8255. You can also email your question or comment, if you like, to feedback@yourcallradio.org. Coming up at 11 o'clock, World Have Your Say from the BBC. Today, the whistleblower of FIFA speaks out. Also, chaos on the East Coast as snow has paralyzed much of New England and upstate New York. That's coming up on World Have Your Say from the BBC at 11 here on KALW San Francisco.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Tomorrow, it's our media roundtable. We'll be talking about the renewed media spotlight on Ferguson, Missouri, as we wait for the St. Louis County Grand Jury to decide whether Officer Darren Wilson should stand trial in the shooting of Michael Brown. How are reporters covering the roots of social unrest in Ferguson? We'll also talk about the militarization of the police force, and we'll hear about a human tragedy in Syria. That's tomorrow. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback at yourcallradio.org. Today we are talking about what's in store for net neutrality in light of last week's decision by President Obama. He came out in support of reclassifying internet service as a utility, which would allow the FCC to enforce more robust regulations and protect net neutrality. But just hours after he made that announcement, his FCC chair, Tom Wheeler, told officials from companies including Google and Yahoo that he wanted a more, quote, nuanced solution. And this is according to a piece in the Washington Post. You can read it at yourcallradio.org. We're talking about this with Michael Copps, former commissioner for the FCC. He served from 2001 to 2011. Over that time, he visited almost 90 communities, engaging in town hall meetings. He's special advisor to the Media and Democracy Reform Initiative for Common Cause, a nonpartisan watchdog fighting for an honest and accountable government. Commissioner Copps will be at a rally at San Francisco City Hall today at 5:30. The hearing starts at 7, and the event is titled Bay Area Speaks, a people's hearing on the future of the Internet. It encourages diverse communities to speak out about why the future of the Internet matters and also testify at City Hall. We're also joined by Craig Aaron, president and CEO of Free Press, an organization that works to protect the free and open Internet and encourage diverse voices in the media. And if you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. What questions do you have about net neutrality and how the FCC operates? We have a former insider here, so if you have any questions for Commissioner Copps about what actually goes on behind closed doors and also with the doors open, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. And let's hear from Ruth Ann and El Cerrito. Hi, Ruth Ann. Welcome
morning.
To the show.
I have a question, and I don't want to micromanage which guest would answer. My guess is that it would fall more to Michael Copps than Craig Aaron. But my question has to do, and I can chastise me, I got really snookered by Obama in 08. And I wasn't so much snookered in 2012 just because he's such a great speech giver. My question to either of your guests is, does Obama, if he's going to be true to his word, which he hasn't been with zillions of other things, can actually remember Obama giving a speech about endorsing card check for unionization. He backpedaled on that. He's backpedaled on lots and lots and lots. But I don't know, and what I'm asking you all, does he have any authority as president to do anything on this issue, or is the FCC 100% a independent agency that can do whatever it wishes, regardless of what Obama says or does?
The FCC is, as you point out, an independent agency. I don't know that I'd use the term 100% independent agency, although theoretically that's what it is. But Congress conducts very close oversight over the FCC, much more than the White House, as a matter of fact. And commissioners are often called up there to testify and are often called by members of Congress. And so there's a close connection there. The president, however, has tremendous authority just as the leader of all the people, as a national spokesman, to highlight issues that he thinks are important to the future of the country. And when I was at the commission, I certainly listened to what the president had to say, gave it the importance that was due, understood that he wasn't telling me how to vote or that there was no necessity for me to vote that way. But there is, it does bring a certain sense of reality to the situation. So I think I think the president's remarks will have an effect. I think it will be a positive effect. Whether it will be sufficient to overcome the opposition that I outlined earlier, I don't know. Whether the president will feel called upon to say more later on, I don't know. But as I said at the outset of the show, this was a remarkable statement, and I think it will help. I do agree with the caller that other opportunities for reform in the media industry have not been commensurate with what we thought we were going to get back in 2009. I was a strong opponent of media consolidation with all of these media companies, small numbers of media companies buying up large, buying up independent, formerly family-run, local, diverse stations and putting them under one national moniker and coming with musical playlists and downsizing the news and firing journalists and all of that. And Senator Obama had been fairly articulate in being opposed to the FCC loosening media ownership caps until it better understood their impact on women and minorities. But as I pointed out a few minutes ago, that bazaar goes on. That consolidation continues. So I was a little disappointed there, but I am enthused about the open internet statement.
Well, what was your reaction when President Obama nominated Tom Wheeler to head the FCC in May 2013? Tom Wheeler bundled at least $700,000 in contributions to President Obama's campaigns over the last two election cycles. According to the Center for Responsive Politics, he served as president of the National Cable TV Association and CEO of the Cellular Telecom and Internet Association. He has been a tech entrepreneur and executive at a D.C.-based firm called Core Capital, which manages about $350 million. And again, former Commissioner Nicholas Johnson said Wheeler's background is as a trade association rep for companies appearing before the commission, a lobbyist in Congress for other FCC customers, and a venture capitalist investing in and profiting from others whose requests he'll have to pass on. He has no record, of which I'm aware, of challenging corporate abuse of power on behalf of consumers and the poor. Those are the words of former Commissioner Nicholas Johnson. Commissioner Copps, what was your initial reaction when you heard about Tom Wheeler?
I am not a fan of the revolving door. I understand that the revolving door exists very pervasively in Washington, D.C., perhaps at no two places more clearly than at the Federal Communications Commission and probably at the United States Trade Representative Office, which is responsible for developing our trade policy around the world. So I didn't expect too much differently. I do know Tom Wheeler. I've known him for years. He's a very intelligent, well-experienced person. I think this is probably his final job. He's left the corporate world and is here now, and I always believe in the powers of redemption and of hope. And I think he is conscientiously wrestling with this issue of net neutrality. I met with him just a week ago, trying to get to the bottom of all the various nuances and all that. I made as strong a case as I could, and I said, you know, we don't have to get into all of the technicalities of the law. You don't have to write every rule for eternity on this open internet order. This is really about reasserting government's authority to conduct some public interest oversight over these telecommunications monopolists. And we've got to do that, and we've got to do it now. And you can come and say there's going to be no fast lanes, no paid prioritization, no blocking, no throttling, no speeding up for your friends and all of that. And you can forbear from some of the regulations that apply to plain old telephone service because they're not exactly alike. They're all communications, but you treat things differently. I mean, that's not rocket science. That's just how you should go about things. So let's get that part done, and then we can all sit down as new problems arise after you have reasserted the agency authorities and evolve rules that can evolve with the state of the industry. So it's not, they're trying to confuse the ISPs, not confuse the issue and confuse people, but it really comes down to that. It comes down to whether there's going to be a place in government where the public interest is protected on the future of the internet.
How did Tom Wheeler respond?
That he's respectfully, he always appreciates hearing, but he didn't tip his hat, tell us which way he was going. I could tell that he still has not made up his mind, I don't think, one way or the other. And I'm hoping with the power of the 4 million people and the president and lots of other folks that that he'll come out on the right side of the equation. Let's hope so.
And, Craig, you have said that Tom Wheeler is increasingly isolated and pushing an unworkable plan that no one supports. Well, except for some of the industry, right?
Well, some of the industry, but, you know, this is where the whole split the baby thing comes in. I mean, I think that he legitimately was trying to split the baby and ended up in a spot in the middle where, like, not only did he not have the support of the public interest in the broader public, but he didn't have the support of the companies either. And that means essentially no one really supported or understood the plan. So you have to make choices here. Either you're going to make choices that, you know, really set up the FCC to be a toothless agency that's not going to be able to protect Internet users and is going to have to hope and trust that telecommunications companies will look out for their customers, which hasn't been going so well so far, or you have to make sure that your agency actually has the authority to step in when really bad things are happening. And I think that the realization is finally coming to the FCC that they're not going to be able to come up with some new secret way that no one's thought of before to do this. There's a really clear choice here, and the only real choice is to reclassify broadband. Importantly, because we've already been told at two different occasions that the FCC, we changed the way the Internet was treated, but we're going to apply our ancillary authority. No, the courts threw that out. No, we could reclassify, but instead we're going to come up with another set of rules, and that lost in court. So they've already got two strikes. So the idea that they would go back again to court when they're inevitably sued with a really weak, confusing proposal, I think that's where ultimately Tom Wheeler even lost the president. The president was relatively quiet throughout this whole process, but, you know, clearly stepped up here toward the end of the process to signal very strongly to the chairman that you're on your own here and you're in the wrong place. And I think that is a message that will ultimately get through, that the chairman has to make a lot of noise about being an independent agency and the like, but that, you know, he's, you know, smart enough, he is a very smart guy, to recognize that the energy and that the right thing to do is to reclassify broadband, especially if this is a policy you're going to have to defend in front of a hostile Republican Congress and in front of a court that has already twice rejected the attempts of your predecessors to make these kind of rules. So we're not done, but I think that, you know, that's the only reasonable conclusion that the chairman can make.
And just quickly, since we brought up companies, Frank writes, "I seriously doubt that those fighting against a more restrictive fast lane internet like Google and Amazon were basically wanting the same thing, except to promote their business models. Is this true? In other words, did those big companies at one time want a version of the internet with fast lanes that benefited them?" Craig, is there a website where we can look to find out where companies stand on net neutrality?
There are, I would look at like battleforthenet.com, which is the site that we've worked on with Demand Progress and Fight for the Future. You can definitely see who's standing up for real net neutrality. Also, savetheinternet.com, which is Free Press's website, has a lot of information about who's spoken out. And when it comes to the companies, it's not a straight black and white kind of story. I mean, you have certainly your internet service providers fighting aggressively, Comcast, Verizon, AT&T, against real net neutrality. You have hundreds and hundreds of startups and innovative companies like Etsy and Kickstarter, that have been very clearly in support of Title II with a very clear understanding that their businesses would never get off the ground if they had to pay special tolls and fees. And then in the middle, you have some big internet companies, even some that historically have spoken out very clearly for net neutrality, that are really big right now, companies like Google, with a lot of different kinds of business interests that have been a little bit quiet here. I think ultimately their policy position is pro-net neutrality, but they're playing, you know, they've sort of standing more in the background. Mm-hmm. Because those companies, a Google or an Amazon or a Yahoo, probably could buy their way out of the fast lane. But if we're making public policy, what we need to be concerned about is the next Google being developed out there, the next Facebook being dreamed up in someone's dorm room. And the only way those things are going to happen is if we have these strong net neutrality protections. And that's why so many innovators, so many venture capitalists, and just so many people who understand the opportunity, the democratic promise of the internet are speaking out on this once obscure issue of net neutrality, because there really is that much at risk. So we can't hope for one of these big companies to come in and save us. It doesn't necessarily mean they're on the wrong side of the issue, but they're just not the ones that have the most to lose.
You know, I've heard from so many small businesses as I travel around the country. I was in Vermont a couple of months ago testifying up there, and small business entrepreneurs would come on and say, since we have the internet, our business has tripled or quadrupled or quintupled, and really fearful that if they lose that access, that they're not going to be able to grow. And how many other places are there where you don't have this high-speed broadband yet, where there are men and women who are really coming up with wonderful ideas for creative new businesses who don't have the capacity to reach out and develop a market because of the lack of not just an open internet, but a lack of the kind of technology, the kind of high-speed, high-value broadband that the country needs to have and so woefully lacks right now.
We just did a show about this, why we pay very high prices for inferior service compared to the rest of the world.
Right. Well, we do, and there's lots of reasons for it. The rest of the world got the jump on us, I think. We invented the internet, and when I went to the FCC in 2001, I think we were probably number one in the world, number one or two. Now you can look at the various ratings. The best say we're 15th or 16th. Some say we're 20th. Some say 40th or 50th. Depends on what you're measuring, if it's penetration or cents per bit or whatever it is. But we're in pretty bad shape. And that's because we lacked a sense of understanding the importance of this. When I went to the FCC, the Bush administration was in charge, and their ideology was free market. The free market will get broadband out everywhere in the United States of America, even when there was no business case for a company to go there, whereas these other countries saw this is an important investment, an infrastructure investment for the future of our country if we're going to be competitive. So fast forward to now, and maybe you have 30% probably maximum of households in the United States that really have that high-speed fiber broadband that you need, whereas in Japan it's like 85% of the households. In Korea it's over two-thirds, some of the countries of Western Europe. And this is a question of economic development and economic rights, but it comes down almost, I think, to a civil right. I think having access to the essential communications infrastructure of the 21st century is a civil right. You cannot be a productive citizen in the United States of America. You can't educate yourself. You can't find a job. You can't take care of your health increasingly without access to this. And that's how we have to come to look at it. This isn't deficit spending or something. This is building essential infrastructure, like we built highways, plain old telephone service, rural electricity, roads, bridges, canals, airports, most of which are falling apart. We're neglecting them too, but we're totally neglecting being in the race and in the vanguard when it comes to broadband.
I think that's why this net neutrality fight is so important, though. It won't solve all those problems. Like, just getting net neutrality doesn't guarantee competition. It doesn't remove all the barriers to cities building their own broadband systems. But it very clearly, if we win this fight, changes the political calculus. And it sets up the internet as, alongside some of the fights over, like, SOPA PIPA, web censorship bills, It makes the internet a winning political issue. It shows the power of internet organizing, and I think it will really transform the debates that are coming. Because in the next 5 or 6 years, they're going to try to rewrite the Telecommunications Act. They're going to try to do all kinds of things. A win here on net neutrality changes that debate and begins to build the political will to do the right things in these fights and actually go back to the kinds of policies we used to have that the rest of the world borrowed from us and that are now building, you know, world-class broadband in ways that are almost unimaginable here in the United States.
Craig Aaron is president and CEO of Free Press. Michael Copps is former commissioner for the FCC. He served from 2001 to 2011. He'll be at a rally in front of San Francisco City Hall at 5:30 tonight, and then at a hearing at 7 o'clock. Bay Area Speaks, a people's hearing on the future of the internet. And if you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. If you have any questions about net neutrality or the FCC, We'll also talk about what's next after 4 million people voiced their opinions and voices on net neutrality. 866-798-8255. The email's feedback at yourcallradio.org. Let's hear from Joe in Oakland. Hi, Joe.
Hi. Am I on now?
Yes, go ahead.
Great. There's a part of the Internet, I'll call it a profit center, that the Internet companies use, that I use, called Voice over IP, and it certainly feels like a phone call. I dial, it rings on the other end, they pick up. Is that regulated, or is that, could that be a way of regulating the wires, the cables? Because, I mean, it certainly feels like I'm using a phone from AT&T. When I pay AT&T, I'm paying a phone bill.
It could be, and it should be, but the FCC has for years failed to make a final determination on what a voice-over Internet protocol telephone really is. Is it an information service, or is it a telecommunication service, and it sort of sits out there in a never-never land and just makes you wonder why an agency lets an issue like that sit for so long when obviously there's a simple answer to it, and Joe's got it.
Why do you think they've let it sit?
Just because of the same forces that we're talking about in the net neutrality debate and the special interests and the power of the status quo in Washington.
And that's why these, again, common sense needs to prevail here. And it's the same, very similar to this debate we're having over net neutrality. Like, clearly the Internet we want is a two-way communication system, not one where we just download what Comcast wants us to see or Verizon wants us to see or AT&T does. It's actually our ability to talk to each other. Two-way communications, telecommunications is obviously how these things should be defined. And, you know, the laws as written are actually quite strong. They just need to be enforced. And unfortunately, the FCC has been whittling away at them and trying to avoid these kind of tough but very, very obvious decisions that need to be put in place, because in the future, you know, we aren't necessarily going to be having these voice conversations. Now, most people, young people, you know, where they used to want to make a phone call like this one that you would never want someone prioritizing or interfering with, they're now doing that with data. And we need to extend those same principles to a world in which where increasingly we are communicating through data. And the principles that are embedded in that Communications Act under Title II are clearly the right ones.
The denial of an open Internet, to me, is just a denial of the whole brilliant technology of broadband and the Internet. We should be ushering ourselves into a golden age of communications. And if we're going to move our programming and our content and our news and information and our civic dialogue, you know, we could have a town square paved with broadband bricks, but not on the road we're going down right now. And, you know, it's such a, you take this invention of broadband, which is, I think, the most important invention in communications technology in all of history, certainly since the printing press, and you short-circuit it at this point in time before it's, while it's still in its adolescence, God knows what else it's capable of doing for us in the years ahead. That is, that's a decision of historic importance, and it would be a historic tragedy to do that.
Thank you for calling, Joe. Let's go next to Lisa in San Francisco. Hi, Lisa.
Hi. Yes, I thank you for taking my call. You know, one of the things that gets lost in this whole debate is that instead of looking at us as customers, we should be looked upon as citizens of the world. And right now, for example, there's things that are going on in the world that we don't get access, that most people don't get access to unless they were with social media. For example, how many Americans know that our government's drug policy, war on drug policy, is actually feeding the criminal gangs in Mexico? Today at 4 o'clock, for example, there's going to be a major demonstration worldwide, actually, to protest the fact that 43 students were disappeared by these criminal gangs. Now, I'm just using that as one example. How many people know that the KKK, for example, has threatened the residents of Ferguson from protesting, for example? How many people know that, you know, I mean, there's so many examples. And the fact is that the information that's available to Americans on a regular basis right now and around the world is mostly available through social media. And this attempt to control the Internet through this business model is just one more way of stifling free speech and free association and stifling information that is crucial to us as citizens of the world.
Well, thank you for calling, Lisa. I hate to cut you off, but we're almost out of time.
You know, I said before I never went out to a hearing without learning something, and probably the best lesson I learned was very early on as a neophyte commissioner. I went out to a town hall meeting, and I was talking about consumers this, consumers that, and after the hearing was over, this woman came up to me, and she said, you know, you should really be talking not just consumers, you should be talking citizens, and that thought has never, ever left my mind since then. We get all wrapped up in these debates over what's reasonable network management and what can a company do and how does it affect consumers? And that's all important. But how it affects our democracy and how it affects citizens and their ability to communicate with one another is so far above all the rest of this stuff as to make the other stuff not meaningless, but certainly on a much lower plane.
We have about a minute left. Again, 4 million people have spoken out on this issue. Right now is another time to speak out as President Obama made this announcement. Commissioner Copps, what's the best thing people can do? What's most effective?
Well, I think that's true. I think people should continue to stay in touch with the FCC. They can transfer messages through organizations like Common Cause and Free Press and EFF and others. That's all important. Eventually, you know, Congress is going to have something to say about this. So I think it's important for people on the Hill to understand that this resonates back home. I mentioned before that the rank and file of the Republican Party is for this. I don't think a lot of these people running around on Capitol Hill so hysterically right now, but the sky is falling, understand that, and they need to understand that, and it would be very helpful for them to understand that.
Craig, 30 seconds.
Go to this hearing tonight at City Hall in San Francisco. Rally at 5:30, hearing at 7. It is not just about listening to people talk. It is about amplifying your voice, getting your voice on the record. The FCC absolutely needs to hear it. The only reason we're in this fight is because so many people have spoken up, and the way we're going to win it is by people continuing to make themselves heard in San Francisco, in the whole Bay Area, and in Washington, D.C., too. So if you haven't added your voice, I strongly, strongly encourage you to do so tonight.
Craig Aaron is CEO of Free Press. Michael Copps is former commissioner for the FCC. The rally begins outside San Francisco City Hall at 5:30, and the hearing starts at 7 o'clock tonight. Thank you both for joining us.
It was great. Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you for listening. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call. On the next Your Call, it's our Friday Media Roundtable. This week, we'll discuss the renewed media spotlight on Ferguson, Missouri, as we wait for the St. Louis County Grand Jury to decide whether Officer Darren Wilson should stand trial in the shooting of Michael Brown. How are reporters covering the roots of social unrest? We'll also talk about the militarization of the police force. Where did you see the best reporting this week? Join the conversation on the next Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To listen to past shows or sign up for our podcast, visit yourcallradio.org. Becca Hoekstra produces the show. Malihe Razazan is senior producer, and Matt Martin is the executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer, and Joe Burke is our studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org. We'll be right back.